Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 256. As always, if you want to get in touch with us, drop us a line, send that email on over to ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is, of course, This Show Is So Gay. And go to the Facebook. Type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. What an incredible show we have for you this week. We must get started with our first guest. Julie Brown is a comedian, an actress, a screenwriter, a commentator, a songwriter, and just a goddess. You know her from her... You just wait, Julie. There's a lot more. You know her from her award-winning parody, Medusa, Dare to be Truthful, and from her plethora of television appearances on everything from Laverne and Shirley to Murphy Brown to Quantum Leap to The Wizards of Waverly Place. She captured all of our hearts as the tough but lovable gym coach, Millie Stoger, in the classic film Clueless. She was a blonde and sang about it in the cult hit Earth Girls Are Easy. Her studio albums are hilarious. Her show, Just Say Julie, was a classic in a way that I can't even put into words, but will attempt to later. Her musical, Homecoming Queen's Got a Musical, is wrapping up its incredible run at the Cavern Club Theater in Silver Lake, California, and there's still tickets for this week's show. We're going to talk about that. And she has a guest starring turn on From Here On Out, the new Here TV comedy we've been talking about for weeks. Julie Brown, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh my God, thank you. I think I'd forgotten about half those things I did. You just said them. I'm like, oh, that's right. I just, like, relive my life.
You just wait, because we're going to be revisiting quite a bit of things that you might have forgotten about. How the heck are you, Julie? Exciting times for you.
So good. I mean, this show has been an incredible blast to do. I have this great cast. They're so funny. They're just so funny. So, like, when I'm not in a scene, I go to the back of the house and watch the scenes that I've seen a million times. And I laugh hysterically every time. So
oh, man.
It's been fantastic.
All right, we're gonna get to the show. But first, we got to do a little Julie Brown, This Is Your Life.
Okay.
Now, it's very weird. Last week, we had Kurt Loder was on the show last week and Julie Brown this week.
Oh, really? How is Kurt Loder?
Pretty deadpan.
Well, I'm not.
No, you're not. You're not. All right, so let's go back. So I'm reading you are a third-generation showbiz family.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I am. Isn't that weird?
What does that mean?
Well, okay, my great-grandfather was an actor and a director in the 20s.
Wow.
The 20s, and he had an affair with Clara Bow, and he was in Citizen Kane. I mean, he doesn't have a speaking part, but he's on the stage with Orson Welles.
Wow.
And he's the head juror in Reefer Madness, and so he's leading the jury in Reefer Madness, and he's in all these films. So that's my great-grandfather, and then my other grandfather was a film editor, and then both my uncles were film editors. My dad worked at NBC when I was growing up. So it's like my family's been in show business, right?
Love
but it. But I'm the only actor since my great-grandfather.
Got it. You really cut your teeth on the comedy stages. That's really where it all started for you.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
What do you remember about that first time on stage?
Oh, the first comedy, okay, that was a fantastic experience.
Oh, great.
I was going to acting school in San Francisco, right?
Okay.
And me and Charlie Coffey, who I wrote a lot of this stuff with, like the Just Say Julies and Medusa, we were just students then, and we had done this show called Atomic Comedy. And somebody had seen us do our show. Our show was sort of based on, like, everybody else was doing Ibsen and these really serious pieces. And we were completely inspired by Saturday Night Live and Monty Python. So we did this completely insane show. And someone told a club owner up there at a club called Chez Jacques about us. And he booked us. So that was the first comedy club I performed at. And it was a gay club, and they were amazing.
Wow.
Like, amazing. And I'm sitting there going, this is the greatest experience of my life, right?
Yeah.
Because they got everything. That was the other great thing. You could make references to anything, and they got it. And it was such a fun experience. And then you also, because San Francisco's that kind of town, we had people that would come back every week, right? So we got this following pretty quick. And I think I was like 20 years old, which is amazing. So
yeah. That
was my first taste of it. And since then, I've realized comedy's not that easy. it was San Francisco was a really great place to start.
And then at some point, you're up there on stage, and Lily Tomlin just says, "That girl's funny. I'm going to cast her and stuff."
That's not what happened.
I like my version.
Yeah, well, I like your version too, but it's a little bit like that. But I was like a huge Lily Tomlin fan, and she was in San Francisco doing her show. Now, I somehow called her manager and got through and invited Lily to my show, which, like, you can only do that when you're 20. When
oh, yeah.
You have the nerve to do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now that would be terrifying. but I invited her to my show, and the great thing is she came to my show.
Oh, my gosh.
And she was, like, she was so sweet, and she said, "I love it. If you come to L.A., write to me." So when I came to L.A., I wrote to her, and she gave me a part in Incredible Shrinking Woman, and that's how I got my SAG card.
Ah, I love it.
Isn't that great?
That is amazing. Now, do you have a sense, this is so funny, because I was reading your IMDb page, and I know that's like actually your life, but do you have a sense that just someone reading your IMDb page is like the most incredible experience ever?
Well, you know what's weird is you're only kind of living in the moment that you're in.
Yeah.
So when you look at your IMDb page, you go like, oh, wow. I mean, it's just still the past. You know, so for someone reading it, they're taking it all in. But for me, I'm just in the moment that I'm in. Like, I'm in doing this musical right now, and I'm only just trying to do the current thing I'm doing.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So sometimes I look back at it, and I go, that was pretty incredible that I was in that.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, even Clueless. You know, Clueless became this big classic. Well, when you're in the middle of doing it, I knew it was a great script, but you didn't know it was going to be a classic.
Right.
You don't know something's a classic.
Right.
When you're working on it. It just sort of becomes that. It was a great experience, but it's sort of surprising that it is what it is now.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, it's iconic. I have to tell you, this is what a dork I am, Julie Brown. Reading your IMDb page, of all the things that could have jumped out of me, what did I squeal about almost more than anything? That would be your star turn as Barbie in an episode of Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Oh, you have to be kidding me. That is hilarious. Because I don't even remember it. I only remember going to the set in the morning and it was in this horrible hospital, which I think is haunted, you know, that there was an abandoned hospital. And Kate Jackson, she didn't even say hi to me.
Like,
yeah, she wasn't, like, cool. And nobody was particularly cool on that show. So I can't remember exactly what my character did.
I think it was pivotal. I think it was plot changing. I don't remember either, but...
Yes, it probably was pivotal and plot changing,
yeah.
But it wasn't like that was a memorable, fun experience. It's one of those things that you do.
I encourage our listeners, if there is no music in your head right now, just go to YouTube and type in Scarecrow and Mrs. King, and that theme song will stick with you for the rest of the day. Trust me on that. That's where I'm at right now. So, yes.
I'm going to do that after this.
Well, we have to talk about Just Say Julie, which I have to tell you, I said it in the bio, and it doesn't make for good radio for me to say I can't put it into words. That was such a formative experience for me, watching that on MTV and the type of comedy that you did. For folks who had never seen Just Say Julie, how would you describe it?
Well, it was pretty it was like hyper comedy. It was extreme comedy. I was playing this girl named Julie who had this really crazy house, and I was sort of required to show three videos and have a relationship with MTV. But I had all these insane things happen to me, you know. And it is hard to, you're right, it's hard to describe that show, isn't it? Because I played a character who's borderline insane, right? And I had, you know, my mom came on the show. I pretended like the Bon Jovi was after me, Bon Jovi's fans. It was very much this character's relationship to MTV, which is crazy. It was a super fun show, and it was a unique thing in that MTV told me that I could do anything I wanted. All I had to do was show three videos. They said, you can do anything you want. Isn't that weird?
And what was your relationship with, like, the other VJs? Did you encounter them quite a bit?
I didn't ever encounter them.
That's what I figured.
Because what happened was, the way the whole thing started is, I went to New York to promote my album, Trapped in the Body of a White Girl.
Right.
And they said, you can be a guest VJ for a week. Well, I thought, okay, I can't go on and just go, hey, here's another video of Stevie Nicks, and be like, it's really great. I couldn't do that, right?
Right.
So I thought, I'm going to make fun of these things, and they're either going to kick me off the air, or they're going to like it, right? But I can't do what they do. So I just started making fun of the videos and, like, making jokes about him and the people, and pretended I had relationships with the artists. And then they said, well, we like this. Why don't you do, like, 6 guest VJ hosts a year? So I made a deal with them to do that. But then I weirdly developed this fear of flying right then.
Okay.
So I never wanted to go out there. So finally they realized that I was, like, you know, not coming out.
Right.
Said, why don't you do a show on the West Coast? And they didn't even have anything out here. So they sent their producer out here, and we rented a small studio in the Valley. And we did the show here, so there was no MTV people here other than one producer. So I didn't, other than downtown Julie Brown, I did have somewhat of a relationship with her, because from when I was in New York, and we had her be a guest on the show a few times because it was sort of funny that we had the same name.
Right.
But other than that, I didn't, I mean, I've met these people, but no relationship. You know what I mean?
Now, I have to tell you, during Just Say Julie, you and I had the first of our 2 falling outs that we'll discuss.
We did.
And I figured you didn't know. That's why I wanted to clue you in.
I did not know that.
That's why we discussed this on the air, Julie. Our first falling out happened during Just Say Julie. I was immensely entertained. But then you made the decision, and I think it was a questionable one, and hopefully in hindsight you feel the same, to lampoon a Wilson Phillips video, and that didn't sit well with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But they were funny, too. I mean, I liked them a lot.
It was hilarious.
Thank you. They got back to me and said they really liked it. So they weren't mad. So you may have had a falling out with me, but they were okay with it.
Well, our second falling out happened during The Edge, when you and Jennifer Aniston, I mean, you guys actually really made your own Wilson Phillips video as well. And I heard they liked that as well.
They did like it. They did. So that's the thing, is I guess they were happy about the attention.
Okay.
They liked it.
All right.
They enjoyed it. So it was really strange, because I would make fun of people, but I've almost never had anybody get really mad at me.
Nice.
And I don't know why, but I haven't. Isn't that weird?
It's fantastic.
I think they must know that I don't really mean it. It's just sort of, you know, teasing them.
Totally.
Even though Madonna, when I did the Medusa thing, Madonna, I found out later, did not like the dog cemetery scene.
Yeah.
She did not like that. And she didn't like the scene where I pretended the dancers were suing her, or just said, don't sue me, because her real dancers did sue her.
And then that happened.
So that happened after the fact, though. When it first came out, her manager called and said, oh, she loves it. She thinks it's great. And
I'm fiercely protective of my Wilson Phillips.
But see, the thing you should realize is that most of the time, if I do some kind of satire of the person, it means I like them.
That's what I
figured.
I have
some relationship to what their material is, you know? I have a point of view about it in some way. Otherwise, it's sort of hard to make fun of something if you don't care about it at all.
If folks have not seen the video Lucky Day, it's on YouTube. It is a Wilson Phillips parody. It's Jennifer Aniston is right there with you. Do you have a sense of how funny you were in that video? Because that, I watched it again this morning and I was dying.
No, I think that video is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I do think it's pretty funny. And you know what? At the time, I wanted to play China because I did not want to wear a fat suit and play Carney, because I felt bad about that.
Right.
But the producer goes, no, you have to do Carney. So then I thought, okay, here I'm in this fat suit. I just have to go for it.
You went for it.
I went for it. I totally went for it, even though I felt kind of bad about it. But luckily, I've run into Carney a few times since then, and she's really, really nice.
Oh, yeah.
And she got it. She got that it was the comedy version of them. And I don't know. She's a really good girl, and I guess has a sense of humor about herself.
Lucky Day, YouTube it, everyone. Now, you have appeared, my friend, on quite a few. It's like the running theme. We keep talking about this every week. You've appeared on quite a few game shows. I will run through them with you, some of them. Now, I'm a little nervous.
Drag Race.
Oh, we'll get to Drag Race. That's the crowning moment. But, and I'm a little nervous. Some of our listeners don't even know what this is. You actually appeared on the classic MTV game show, Remote Control.
Oh, yeah. Nope. There's probably a lot of listeners who don't know that.
Oh.
It was it was a game show on MTV that wasn't, it wasn't on that long, was it?
A couple years, not that long at all.
A couple years.
Yeah.
And I was on it, and it was fun, but I also remember being really frustrated because I was clicking my buzzer, and it wouldn't click. It wouldn't buzz. So I really feel that I won, even though I think technically I didn't. I was robbed. That's what it was. I was robbed. You know, once you're on MTV, they ask you to do all those things.
I bet. Right? I bet. Yeah. Okay, all right, so you've appeared on Hollywood Squares. You've appeared on The Weakest Link.
No, I haven't been on that.
Oh, it said so on your page.
Did it say I was on that?
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe I should just go yes. Yes, I was on
that. but you also mentioned a whole new breed of watchers know you from RuPaul's Drag Race. What was that experience like?
That was crazy. Oh, my God. I thought, you know, I really liked the show.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, you know, you think it's maybe going to take like half a day to shoot, right?
Yeah.
But no.
No.
And later they explained to me, they go, well, this is drag queens. Like, drag queens take so long to get dressed and made up. So the first time, the first day we shot the Snatch Game, that was a whole day shoot, Snatch Game.
Yeah.
Whole day.
I bet.
And then you're going, that, like, that's crazy, right? Then you come back for the actual contest part, and that was a whole other day. And it's because drag queens take forever to get in hair and makeup. I didn't know that. I mean, I think RuPaul was getting into his second outfit. It took like 7 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that crazy?
What do you do in that time? Do you just bond with Downtown Julie Brown?
I was talking to Michelle Visage, who's great.
Oh, yeah.
She's awesome. You just are kind of hanging out, talking to people, waiting. No one told me that it was two complete whole days to shoot an episode, right?
I love the idea that you wrote a new musical, and everyone's like, oh, when did you find time to do that? Oh, yeah, no, I appeared on RuPaul's Drag Race, and I had a lot of downtime.
Yeah, I had a lot of downtime. That's when I wrote it. No. There's a lot of downtime during that show, which I didn't know. And I was on Jinx Monsoon did Grey Gardens,
yes.
Grey Gardens character. And I'd never seen him before. I thought he was amazing, like crazy amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because he was really doing a character. And I felt like some of the other drag queens were just, they were just counting on hair and makeup.
Right.
And he was just so good that I was blown away by that.
I love it.
It was a really fun experience. It just was surprising that there's so much to it.
You got to budget some time for it.
Yeah. So if I do it again, I'm going to know that. Okay, that's 2 days.
That's 2 days,
right?
There.
I did not know that.
Well, I have to tell you, my nieces would like to thank you for your part in writing Camp Rock and Camp Rock 2.
Thank you. That was a really interesting experience, too, because we wrote it. I mean, you know, I wrote it with my brother, that one, which is really interesting, too. And I wrote the part for myself. And then we thought, I didn't think it was going to get made, because a lot of times you write something, you get a job, and you write it, and then nothing happens for the longest time. Right?
Yeah.
Then suddenly they call us up, they go, okay, we're going to, instead of, because it was originally one guy was the sort of star character, and they go, it's these brothers, the Jonas Brothers, they're going to be a team instead of one guy. And I'd never heard of them.
Right.
And then they go, we're going to go shoot in Canada in this very remote location. But somehow the script had gotten leaked that we were going to be there. So they had to have, like, guards, like, in the woods of Canada. And then they had to change the title of it for a while to do another location, because I guess there was all these girls that were trying to track them down.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
And some gay boys, I would imagine.
And probably some gay boys.
Yeah.
And then when we had the premiere in New York, that was the most crazy thing. I mean, there were girls lining the streets.
Oh, my gosh.
Like young teen girls. It was a fun experience, and they're very nice people, too. So
oh, yes. That was fun. We've heard that. Now, in 2005, apropos to our show, you released the song, which I hope everyone knows this, and if you don't, you can go download it right now. You released the song, I Wanna Be Gay.
Yes, I did. I did. I like that song a lot. I always felt like, you know, I made the joke before that years ago that I was a gay man trapped in a woman's body. I would say that, I think, in my early club act. So I think, and in some ways, I very much identify with gay men. So that's what the song's about. It's about just sort of the what I perceive as the freedom in being gay. You know, that's my perception of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's really like, but that was just the point of view that I had of it.
If folks have not downloaded I love that song. That song is like an anthem.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes, no, that, folks, iTunes right now, go download that. Which brings us to, and we talked about it a little bit, but let's go more in depth. Homecoming Queen's got a musical. What inspired you to put this together?
I always wanted to do it.
Yeah.
But there's the inherent problem with trying to make that into a musical or even a movie or whatever is that it's about a school shooting, right?
Right.
And when it first came out in the early 80s, that wasn't even a thing. So it was just, everyone thought it was wonderful, and they loved it, and they thought it was ridiculous. Then school shootings actually became something that happened, which was so horrible.
Right.
So I always thought, like, how do you even do this? So when I saw Kurt Kohler, I went to see his show at the Cavern Club. He did a satire of The Legend of Billie Jean, that movie.
Oh,
do that movie?
I love that movie.
Yeah, and it was really campy and funny and so hilarious. And he'd been wanting to work with me, so I said, want to write Homecoming Queen with me? And so we figured, how do we make it be ridiculous? So we watched all these 80s movies and, you know, like Prom Night and everything, and we made it kind of a spoof on 80s horror movies.
Yeah.
So there's actually more death in it. So there's, like, people die, like the Homecoming Queen, you know, stabs the lunch lady. We made it into a horror movie, a campy, funny, ridiculous horror movie. So I think you don't sit there and think, you know what I mean, the school shooting thing. It's just, and the way it's done, there's a guy named Drew Drogi who plays the Homecoming Queen. So that's ridiculous, right?
Right.
And when he's doing the shooting in the show, he's actually got a puppet body. And so there's so many layers where it's just absurd. And I think that's how, you know, because nobody said they were offended or they thought it was, nobody said that. Because it's too campy and ridiculous.
I have already talked to people who have seen it who said, oh my gosh, you just, first of all, it flew, everyone said the same thing, that it flew by because it was so much fun.
Oh, I love that, really?
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
And just that it was just, the word that came up twice was, it's a romp.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
I think it's great.
It is. It's just really silly and fun, and there's amazing performers in it. We got really funny, comic actors. They're so funny. So it's been an incredible experience. And the other thing, the reason why I did it now, is that my son just went to college, like, I think, is it a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And I wasn't going to try to do something where I was, like, out at night all the time when he was going through high school.
Right.
Right? So once he went to college, I went, I can do anything now.
Yeah.
So that's why this happened now, too.
Now, as a college dean, I have to ask, anytime I talk to a parent of a college student, are you letting him live his life?
I am trying so hard.
It's hard.
It's really hard. I'm trying. I have to let go. It's okay. And he's a really great kid. He doesn't give me, you know, problems. But it's still hard because I think it's the habit of that you were so responsible for this person, and then suddenly they're an adult. It feels like suddenly they're an adult, and you have to allow them to act like an adult and be an adult.
It's a journey.
It's difficult.
It's a journey. Now, your buddy Terry Ray, who we had on the show a few weeks ago from Here On Out, Here TV's new comedy, we know you're going to be appearing on it. He wanted you to have the opportunity to play the same game show that everybody else has been playing on our show. So we came up with a couple questions for you so that you could win some prizes too.
Okay.
So we have five questions for you, and I'm guaranteeing right now that you're going to win because we're going to help you win.
Okay, well, I already like that.
I know, right? So we have, especially because we've already learned that you are in your present projects, and yet all of these questions are about past things that you've done.
Okay,
so we're going to help you. You just have to get, let's say, 3 out of 5, and you'll win.
Okay.
Your first credit there on the IMDb was Susie Simmons on Happy Days. What was the name of that episode? And we'll give you 3 choices. Number 1, Oh Wilderness. Number 2, Ah Wilderness. And number 3, Oy Wilderness.
It's one of the first two. Is it Oh Wilderness?
I'm sorry, the correct answer was Wilderness.
Oh, damn it.
I know, it's okay, because you're going to get three, trust me. We're going to work with you.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to even change this question. We're going back to Scarecrow and Mrs. King. Other than Kate Jackson.
Because I told you I remember nothing.
I know, this is why this is going to be fun. Other than Kate Jackson, and you could also name Kate Jackson as the answer, name one actor on that show.
What's that guy's name? He was really good looking. Well, I'll say Kate Jackson for now.
That is the correct answer. Very good, Julie Brown. I think you were looking for Bruce Boxleitner.
That's right, yes. He's really cute, right?
Oh, very cute. Very cute. I love that show. Okay, we're moving on. Please tell me, so question number three, you already have one correct. Please tell me, let's just say two of the letters, but if you get all five, you'll win the whole game. Please tell me what two of the letters stood for in the name Julie in the opening credits of Just Say Julie.
JJJ is for Julie. You are unique.
There we
go. That's two, right?
That's two right there.
Oh, I love you all so truly. I watch you every week. I got him.
Please say you wrote that too, right?
I didn't.
Come on!
Okay, I wrote it. No, my producer, who was this great guy named Charlie Singer, so wonderful to work with, he had somebody do it. Because I feel like it's something I would have written something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But the schedule was so tight on that show. It was so ridiculous. I had to do 7 shows in 3 days. And you've seen like the... how hyper that was.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I have to go to the hospital after we'd shoot 7 shows. I would feel bad exhausted.
Oh, my gosh.
So didn't get time to do the theme song.
Well, we're giving you credit. We're giving you credit for that. We're giving you credit for the whole game, and we're crediting you with writing the song.
But
we still have 2 more questions. We're going to fly through them.
Okay, all right.
What number secretary were you for Murphy Brown?
For Murphy Brown. It was in the 90s.
Close.
Right? Or it was 87.
One more.
88?
It was 88. 88 is the correct answer.
Okay, well, I was really close.
That was good.
Yeah.
And now, last question. Complete this sentence. Okay, it's a movie quote. Miss Stoger, my plastic surgeon doesn't want me doing any activity where what?
Balls come near my face.
That is the correct answer. Balls fly at
Yay,
my nose.
I
yes.
Got it. I got it.
Julie Brown, you are a winner at our game show. Everybody wins.
God. Thank God.
All right, so we have the musical. Everybody needs to stroll on over to juliebrown.com, and you can link up right there to Homecoming Queen's Gotta Gun, the musical, and there are tickets available for this coming weekend. What else is coming up for you?
You know what happened? I worked on Melissa and Joey as a consultant, but that just ended. The season finale happened the other day, Thursday, and I'm going to do Earth Girls Are Easy as a musical in the fall.
Oh, love it.
So, yeah, I'm really into these musicals right now. The live theater thing is, because I can do it suddenly, you know, I have the time.
Right.
I can go out at night. I'm really into it. I love these musicals.
Well, and it's so great to have alternative theater. It's a topic that comes up on our show quite a bit, you know, and so much of the theater out there, particularly in some of these New York City, LA venues, is so inaccessible, mostly because it's so expensive. And so it's so great that folks can get out there and see different types of theater and be entertained in just the same way and in that unique way that live theater provides.
I know. I mean, God, those shows are so expensive. Like Book of Mormon.
It's crazy.
Like, isn't it insane?
Yeah.
Isn't it like $400 or something?
It's unfortunately an art form that is just pricing people out, so it's a little bit of a bummer. But you're there providing theater for everybody to be able to access.
For everybody. For everybody.
I love it. And
so
again,
people should come to the musical this weekend, and then they should look for Earth Girls Are Easy in the fall.
JulieBrown.com. I have to tell you, Julie Brown, that was such a formative experience, seeing Just Say Julie on MTV. It actually opened my eyes in ways that I really and truly cannot even begin to thank you for what comedy, oh my gosh, for what comedy could look like, for what energy could look like, for how you can put yourself out there in an authentic and fun way, make people laugh, and yeah, just draw people in. You're such a hero of mine.
Oh, thank you. God, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. Your show was a blast.
Well, thank you. All right, folks, get out there. Go see Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun, the musical. Julie Brown, what an absolute treat having you on the show.
All right, thank you so much. It was really fun.
All right, folks, and we are back with another incredible California-based guest for this week's show. Chris Verdugo is the executive director of the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles, which is in its 35th season, and what a season it has been, from Saturday Night Fever to Christmas Spectaculars to God Save the Queens to the third annual Voice Awards, which we'll talk about in a little bit. When he's not directing executively, he produces events all over the place, and now he's here with us. Chris, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you, Ken. It's a pleasure to be back. And as I said before, how gay is this show?
So gay each and every week, Chris.
Because I don't know much about gay. Actually, I feel my life is all gay. I need some straight people in it.
Yes. Well, for the next few minutes, you're not getting that here, Chris. In fact, you've made some choices that have excluded you from that possibility right now. We'll talk about that. You ready, sir? We have much ground to cover.
I'm ready. Let's do this.
Let's just go personal. Tell everyone, and we'll talk all about the Gay Men's Chorus, but tell everyone what the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles means to you personally.
Oh, wow. That's an excellent question, and one that I do not get asked often. Personally, well, I'll start with my bio reads, for those who have read my bio at a show. I started singing with a gay chorus, this South Florida Gay Men's Chorus, in I don't even remember what year it was. I was 19, and I'm 42 now. So that kind of gives you an idea of how long gay choruses have been in my life to some degree or another. Specifically, GMCLA means a great deal to me. I started with this organization in 2006 as a singer. It's been my family. It's been my refuge. It has been where I have been able to grow my talents and my skills from a fundraiser and an event producer to a development director to an executive director. And it is really, you know, my pride and joy of all of the various careers I've had throughout my existence. This one is the one that I feel is sort of like my legacy. And it is very close to my heart.
Well, just to clear this up, just in case there's anyone who's in the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles who's asking this question, we will ask it on behalf of them. What does an executive director of a chorus actually do?
Well, thanks for asking that. Hopefully they're listening. I manage a team of 7 employees and 5 consultants. We're a very, very big team. I manage the finances of the organization. I fundraise. I meet with our donors and our corporate donors, our conductor circle members. I have a lot of lunches and dinners, so I go to the gym a lot so I don't get too terribly big.
Nice.
It's managing, working with our board of directors. We have 24 board of directors, so it's a big board and an influential board. You know, and it's really managing my team, my development folks, my artistic folks, my operations folks, and it's getting the best out of them so that we can, provide the best experience for our artists and for our audience.
Now, managing a board is always a fun task. Does anyone on the board ever say, you know what, I want a solo?
No, actually, most of our board is made up of community leaders from organizations and corporations like Wells Fargo, AT&T, Sempra, State Farm. We've got a great board, really solid supporters, and they are wonderful in that they let me do my job, and I guess I must be doing it well because they just step aside and let me go. And they're there for me when I need them.
As we tell all the executive directors we have on the show, we should pause right here and remind you that your board has asked that we use this interview as your mid-year review. So this is good. This is good.
Excellent.
Yes. Which is not to say that you do not have a life outside the chorus, and we'll get back to the chorus in a minute, but you are an event producer as well.
I am. I don't do that as much as I used to, actually, to be fully honest. This is a very all-encompassing position.
Yeah.
My weeks are about 60 hours a week, and so this is pretty much all I do. On occasion, I will get out and do the odd event here or there. But I no longer do that, and that's okay with me. This is my sole focus, and it requires it to be my sole focus.
I bet. Well, I have to tell you, one of the number one questions that we get from our listeners over the years, they email us and say, hey, I was just watching clips from the Miss Universe 2004 pageant in Ecuador. Who choreographed that?
I can't believe Wow, if you could see me now, I am red.
So when they ask us, Chris, because it's just one of those number one questions for it, it's always, you know, can we get Neil Patrick Harris on the show, followed with, hey, who choreographed that Miss Universe 2004 pageant? What should we tell them?
I was one of several. I was one of several choreographers. It was a great experience. There's an embarrassing moment that I thought you were going to bring up, but you didn't.
I'm not done, Chris. Would you like to bring it up first?
Sure.
Go for it.
I'm so red.
I have no idea what it is. So you bring it up. I'm a very nice host, but yes, go ahead.
So here goes. During the dress rehearsal that happens the day of, they go, you know, they really run it through, and they have, you know, they pick their finalists, they pick their top five, and this is just, you know, this is the production team picking people so that everyone sees how the show is actually going to run. So when they get down to the last two girls, well, they pull one out and they always put in the new guy, whoever the new guy is. And so the new guy that year was me. And so I got to be up there with the it was two of us. It was I think it was Miss Canada and it was me.
Okay.
And of course, no girl can win because it's just not that's not. So when they announced Miss Universe 2004, it's actually me who had to walk down the runway in a tiara and flowers.
Wow.
And wave in front of 4,000 people. And trust me, I've never lived that down.
That's just what I call a Tuesday night, Chris. I don't know why that was so weird for you.
Yeah, thanks to my ex who videotaped it all and posted it on the internet.
And we will provide a link to that, listeners. Just stay tuned for that. Well, how would you describe your choreographic voice? What type of dance was distinctive to Chris Verdugo?
Well, that's interesting. If I would have to say, and I think part of the reason that I was part of that team is because I'm Hispanic, I'm Cuban and Puerto Rican, and my influence in my dancing has always been that of a very Latin flavor.
Okay.
And being as how we were there in Ecuador, I think that just kind of made sense.
Yeah.
I choreographed for a very long time of my life, from about the age of 18 till I was 30, and then I just let it go.
All right. I feel like we are effectively nixing half the emails we're always going to get now, because we have now answered this for everyone. Chris Verdugo helped choreograph Miss Universe 2004. Back to the chorus. That was fun. That was fun.
Oh, my gosh. I wish you could see me. I was so red. Anyway.
That's why we cover this ground. Back to the chorus. Tell everyone what auditioning for the chorus looks like, because all we know is what it looked like auditioning for the Gay Men's Chorus of New York City on Will and Grace. So what does auditioning for the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles look like?
It's actually pretty rigorous, and you have about 7 to 8 minutes.
Okay.
And in those 7 to 8 minutes, you get to come in, you get to sing your prepared piece. They will ask you to sight read a piece. You will sing in four-part harmony, and the artistic director, along with the music leaders, will gather some general information about who you are, what you do, what other talents you can bring to the chorus. I think the one thing that most people don't know is that you have to have a really great voice to sing in this chorus. There's that much talent in LA, and it's awesome for us because we get to be we get to just sit in a place that other choruses don't necessarily can't, because they don't have the talent pool that we do here or in places like New York. But the other piece of our audition process is that you have to bring more than just your voice. You've got to bring, you've got to have other talents that you're willing to share with this chorus, whether they be, you know, whether you're connected to fundraising or you're passionate about that, or you're passionate about being in the schools program or a live music project. We really want people who are fully well-rounded and can bring more than just their voice to the company. we actually brought in, I think, about 50 new members last September, and we grew the chorus to about 250, 260, but we turned away just as many.
What advice do you have for folks who are auditioning about picking their own piece? Because I would imagine some people just pick the wrong piece. I'm gonna leave it there, but I feel like there are some songs you're like, oh no, that was not right.
You know, the advice that I give is check in with other people about what you should do, because what you think you should do is not necessarily the piece that will showcase your voice the best. And sometimes we get attached to a certain piece of music that we love or we think we can emote or that will just absolutely show our voice off. And that's not, we are not always the best judge of that because we get very close to our music. So my advice is check in with other people. Sing for other people. Don't be as nervous as you think. Don't get nervous.
Right.
Yeah, it really is not, you're walking into some of the most welcoming group of people ever. But I've heard through the grapevine there are people taking voice lessons to prepare themselves for the auditions in September.
Okay.
So it's kind of interesting.
Are there any songs that just right here on this show you could tell people, you know what, stop using that song to audition?
Don't ever sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
There you go. There you go.
And I'm sure I'm going to get hate mail for that.
No.
But that's we're done with that.
And also, let me add, also do not sing Corner of the Sky, because Chris Verdugo did it, and he did it better, right?
How do you know this?
I know everything, Chris.
Did I say this to you in a former interview?
I'm sure I have no idea what you're talking about. Now, in the audition process, this is the day we're having. Please tell us where it is in the audition process. Is it at the beginning, the middle, or the end? Where is it in the process that your folks have to pledge allegiance against the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus?
No, none of that. We love our brothers in San Francisco. And I'm not saying anything else because last time you trapped me.
But just to be clear, you guys are the Sharks or the Jets? Which one are you claiming? I'll move on.
No, you move on.
Let me ask you a very serious question, and we're not naming names. That's actually not what we do here. But I would imagine that over the course of the years that people have been asked to leave, and for various reasons. I would imagine one of them is that it's difficult to balance both the demands of the chorus and life outside the chorus. And despite some members' best intentions, it doesn't always work out. Is it you who has to kick them out?
Oh, no. We have a membership committee set up. We have quite an infrastructure here, both with paid employees as well as our volunteer. We have a volunteer staff. We have a whole membership committee.
Nice.
Made up of, I think, 14 members from each section, and then a president, vice president, treasurer, secretary. And they really deal with membership issues. Unless it's something of, in which, knock on wood, we don't have to deal with something very grave. No, they handle all the membership issues, and they handle them really, really well. And, that happens. This is a commitment. And some people don't realize what a commitment it is coming in. Sometimes they have to leave. Sometimes we have to have just serious conversations about, can you really manage this? But at the end of the day, it's always amicable. And we let people go for a year or 6 months and then let them come back and re-audition.
All right, well, all good things coming up now. Let's talk about some of just the greatest things you guys have been doing all year. Tell everyone about the Alive Music Project.
Oh, I would love to. So the Alive Music Project is a program we started about 7 years ago with LAUSD schools. And basically, we get about 20 to 30 guys who will visit an LAUSD school. Anywhere from 40 to 800 students will come to an assembly, depends on the school. And basically, it's a music program with a music education wing to it. That we will hold a master class with their chorus if they have a chorus, and if not, we will do the assembly. If they have a GSA, members of our chorus will meet with their GSA members, Gay Straight Alliances, and the program itself, has really relevant music to use so that they can identify with it, but interwoven with it are stories of our members. And what it basically does is put a face to this thing that they've heard of called gay. And some of them have never met a gay person, don't know what it really is, or have an idea in their head. And they start to see that these gay men in front of them are just like their dads, you know, or their uncles. And they're just guys who are, you know, have normal jobs, who love to sing. And it starts to break down that wall that has been erected by stereotypes, by what they see or hear in school. And it's become a very, very effective tool for us. And I believe about the other thing that we tackle with the program is bullying. Our surveys have said just last year that 94% of the students who actually experienced AMP said that they would change their behavior due in part to the Alive Music Project. And that for us was huge. And we also had 30%, which this is even more staggering to me, 30% of all the students surveyed said that it was their first time they had actually heard live music.
Wow.
And I don't know about you. I heard live music when I was like 5 years
old.
Yeah. My grandpa was a musician. He would play the guitar, and we'd sit, you know, I'd sit on his lap and sing. So for me to comprehend that doesn't exist in today's day and age, you know, it's really huge. But it's that is sort of the society that we have created, that most people get so much of their media and influences from computers, from TVs, and that, you know, live art is something that's just not as prevalent as it was years ago, or concerts. And so, you know, we're really making an impact in the lives of these young people, not just through music, but also achieving a greater purpose of helping them to see that their fellow LGBT students are just like them.
Absolutely. Now, another place where you're making a difference is your affiliation with the It Gets Better Tour. And we've had Jimmy Nguyen on, and Liesl Reinhardt, and Sasha Sackett have been on the show previously to talk about the It Gets Better Tour. But tell me, from your executive director vantage point, why is it important for the chorus to be affiliated with the It Gets Better musical tour?
We have always based our mission upon reaching out to the community at large, to be bigger than ourselves. And it sort of made sense about 2 years ago when we were wondering how do we expand our Alive Music Project? How do we create a model? Who do we align ourselves with? And It Gets Better was, you know, just arrived on the scene. It had an amazing message.
Right.
And we started those talks with the folks at It Gets Better to build that collaboration. But at the end of the day, you know, we here in LA live in a sort of bubble. And even though, because things for LGBT people here are really good. But when you step out of here, when you step 10 miles out of here, it's very different, or 20 miles. So imagine going to a small town like Ogden, Utah, or Whitewater, Wisconsin, or Oxford, Ohio. Things are very, very different in those small communities. And the fact that we are able to take this message, this residency program, to meet with high school students and middle school students and deliver this message, the message of it getting better, and also to be able to lead them with an action plan of how to keep making it better, not just for the LGBT youth, for any youth that are getting bullied. It's so much of what our mission is about.
It's amazing. It's amazing work. Oh, I want to see it. I haven't seen it.
Oh, I'll talk to you offline about seeing it.
Okay. Get me there. That brings us to the Star-Studded Voice Awards Gala, which is taking place on Saturday, May 3rd, 2014, at the Globe Theater, which is on the Universal Studios lot. Tell everybody about the Voice Awards. And in particular, look, we have our listenerships all over the world, but certainly all over the country, and so not everybody's in L.A. So why is this something that we should care about outside of L.A.?
I'll tell you why. The funds that are raised through the Voice Awards go specifically toward our It Gets Better project and the Alive Music Project.
Yeah.
It's our fundraiser to be able to continue getting this message out across the country. And specifically, one of the initiatives that we're embarking on this summer is a California initiative to be able to bring the It Gets Better program to the Central Valley between here and Fresno, or even even just north of the Bay Area, and to be able to bring these communities who otherwise have absolutely no way of experiencing the It Gets Better program, to be able to bring them this gift. And that's why the Voice Awards exist. And through this vehicle, we're able to fund these programs. We're very fortunate this year that we have just a stellar lineup. It really is star-studded. From, you know, well, I don't know if you're going to go into it or if you want me to go into it.
No, you do it. You do it.
We're honoring philanthropists Brian Pendleton and Chad Goldman, who are just two of the most amazing men I have ever met. They have supported our West Hollywood Library. They have schools that they have built in the Philippines. They run an organization called Cause Force, which has, through its existence, what it does is basically create these walks, cancer walks and rides for all these different cancer organizations in Australia and Canada. And through their efforts, they have raised over $650 million for cancer research. So
wow.
we love them, and they're great supporters of GMCLA. We're also honoring the Montgomery family, who are the subjects of this documentary entitled Families Are Forever, which basically chronicled this very, very Mormon family and their stance on Prop 8, and it chronicles them going through what happens when their son comes out and how their lives sort of shatter and how they put it back together and how they still stay in the Mormon church, but they decide that whatever they decide that their son is perfectly fine the way he is, and that it's become their mission to move the Mormon church, not have the Mormon church move them.
Nice.
Very powerful. We're also honoring Uprising of Love, which is this global coalition that was created right before the Sochi Olympics,
mm-hmm.
to tackle LGBT human rights across the world, actually.
Yeah.
And accepting on their behalf is Oscar-winning producer Bruce Cohen and the one and only Melissa Etheridge, who will also be performing with the chorus.
Oh, my gosh.
Very excited about that. Yes. Yes, very exciting. And our last honoree is the Crown Prince of India, Manvendra Singh Gohil, who is the only out gay royal of any royal family in the world. And he established a foundation, the Laksha Foundation in India, to help those people afflicted with AIDS or HIV. He is an amazing man in and of his own right, and it was a big coup for us to be able to ascertain him as an honoree this year.
Wow. So we're talking gala.
We're talking big time gala. We just announced, or we are announcing, Felicity Huffman and William H. Macy as presenters. Polly Perrette from NCIS and Lance Bass are hosting. And then we've got Steve Young, three time Super Bowl champion and Hall of Famer with his wife Barbara. Quite a number of sports figures that have signed on. Olympians. It's some Broadway stars as well. I don't want to go through the whole list. It's on our website, but it's really fantastic. We are very excited about the potential this event has to raise a lot of funds to fund our programmatic work. And I think we've lined them up. This is the year that I feel like we just kind of said, look, this is what we're doing, and we would love for you to be a part of it. And people just signed up left and right. And we feel very blessed and fortunate in this organization right now to be sitting 3 weeks out and have the kind of slate of celebrities and honorees that we do. It's humbling.
When you told Melissa Etheridge that I would be singing with her on You Can Sleep While I Drive, what did she say?
She said she's been waiting for that to happen her entire life. Those are her exact words. And then she said he should come to my wins.
And I said, I can't. I'm in Chris Verdugo's corner of the sky. So don't try me, Chris. I could do this all day. All day. Well, so exciting. Oh, my gosh.
So folks can
go online and they can purchase tickets to go there to the Voice Awards.
Actually, if you just go to gmcla.org, it's on our homepage. That takes you right over to the Voice Awards site, which has all the information on tickets, tables, honorees, our special guests, our silent auction items. A lot more information on the beneficiaries, the It Gets Better project, and the live music project. And tickets are $300. And then if you up it to the VIP ticket, you actually get invited to a private event Friday night before the awards, where there will be where you get a semi-private audience and concert by the Prince himself.
Wow.
And you know, other celebrity guests will be there as well. So you kind of get to mix and mingle. I think the party is limited to 125 people, so it's very intimate at a beautiful home in the Hollywood Hills.
I bet. I want to interview people on the red carpet.
Well, yes, absolutely. We'll get you in touch with our PR team. You should be there.
I would love it. I would love it. All right. Well, I know you just gave the site, but just so everybody's clear, where can everyone go to learn all the great things the chorus is doing?
www.gmcla.org.
You like your job.
I love my job.
This is one of my favorite things to do because it's such a treat to have executive directors of all different organizations on the show. I give you the floor here at the end of our chat to extol the virtues of your wonderful staff.
Well, let me tell you, I do have one of the best staffs on this planet. I love them. They are such hard workers. And I just had two new hires, a new director of development and a new operations manager who have literally just started today.
Wow.
And you know, they're just so excited. You know, my staff loves what they do because they love what this organization stands for. And when you really have people that are so engaged in your mission and your vision, it's a joy.
Yeah.
It's really a joy. You know, we smile, we laugh, we really have a great time together, and everybody pulls their weight.
Love it. I love it. Well, look, our show is about nothing if not about how do we raise up the voices of everyone around us. And obviously on a real literal level, what you guys are doing over there at the chorus is raising up voices. But it's not just to the people singing the chorus. It's the people who get to partake in that community and see what it is that you are all doing and see the passion of you and your staff. And it's just a joyous thing to behold, my friend.
No, thank you very much. Thanks for all your support, Ken.
You guys keep on singing. Keep doing what you're doing.
We will keep changing hearts and minds, one song at a time.
That about wraps things up for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. Our huge, ginormous thanks to the incomparable Julie Brown, just such a hero of mine. And of course to Chris Verdugo and everybody over there at the Gay Men's Chorus of Los Angeles. Go check them out. And hey, stroll on over to Frock Magazine. It's FROCK magazine.com. We had the editor-in-chief, Katie Glover, on the show about 2 months ago, and they did this four-page spread in their latest issue on This Show Is So Gay, and it is such an honor. So you can check it out, FROCKmagazine.com. In the meantime, get out there, folks. Go do some incredible things. Use your voice the way you know how to use it to raise up the voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. And while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?